1.
He was lost when he came to us, and I fear the silver spoons he stole from us didn't save him when he ran away and went up into the high domains. Yet in the end, the lost man, the runaway man, was our guide. Gry called him the runaway man. When he first came, she was sure he'd done some terrible thing, a murder or a betrayal, and was escaping vengeance. What else would bring a lowlander here among us? Ignorance, I said. He knows nothing of us. He's not afraid of us. He said people down there warned him not to come up among the witches. But he knows nothing about the gifts, I said. It's all just talk to him. Legends. Lies. We were both right, no doubt. Certainly Emmon was running away, if only from a well-earned reputation for thievery, or from boredom. He was as restless, as fearless and inquisitive and inconsequential as a hound puppy, trotting wherever his nose led him. Recalling the accent and turns of speech he had, I know now that he came from far in the south, farther than Algolanda, where tales of the uplands were just that. Tales. Old rumors of the distant northland, where wicked witch folk lived in icy mountains and did impossible things. If he'd believed what they told him down in Danner, he'd never have come up to Caspermont. If he'd believed us, he never would have gone on higher in the mountains. He loved to hear stories, so he listened to ours. But he didn't believe them. He was a city man. He'd had some education. He'd traveled the length of the lowlands. He knew the world. Who were we, me and Gry? What did we know? A blind boy and a grim girl, 16 years old, stuck in the superstition and squalor of the desolate hill farms that we so grandly called our domains. He led us on, in his lazy kindness, to talk about the great powers we had. But while we talked, he was seeing the bare, hard way we lived, the cruel poverty, the cripples and backward people of the farms, seeing our ignorance of everything outside these dark hills, and saying to himself, "Oh, yes, what great powers they have, poor brats." Gry and I feared that when he left us, he went to Garamond. It is hard to think he may still be there, alive, but a slave, with legs twisted like corkscrews, or his face made monstrous for Eroy's amusement, or his eyes truly blinded, as mine were not. For Eroy wouldn't have suffered his careless airs, his insolence, for an hour. I took some pains to keep him away from my father when his tongue was flapping, but only because Cannock's patience was short and his mood dark, not because I feared he'd ever use his gift without good cause. In any case, he paid little heed to Emmon or anyone else. Since my mother's death, his mind was all given to grief and rage and rancor. He huddled over his pain, his longing for vengeance. Gry, who knew all the nests and eyries for miles around, once saw a carrion eagle brooding his pair of silvery, grotesque eaglets in a nest up on the sheer, after a shepherd killed the mother bird who hunted for them both. So my father brooded and starved. To Gry and me, Emmon was a treasure, a bright creature come into our gloom. He fed our hunger, for we were starving too. He would never tell us enough about the lowlands. He'd give an answer of some kind to every question I asked, but often a joking answer, evasive or merely vague. There was probably a good deal about his past life that he didn't want us to know. And anyhow, he wasn't a keen observer and clear reporter, as Gry was when she was my eyes. She could describe exactly how the new bull calf looked, his bluish coat and knobby legs and little furry horn buds, so that I could all but see him. But if I asked Emmon to tell me about the city of Darris Water, all he said was that it wasn't much of a city, and the market was dull. Yet I knew, because my mother had told me, that Darris Water had tall red houses and deep streets, that steps of slate led up from the docks and moorages where the river traffic came and went, that there was a market of birds, and a market of fish, and a market of spices and incense and honey, a market for old clothes, and a market for new ones, and the great pottery fairs to which people came from all up and down the Trond River, even from the far shores of the ocean. Maybe Emin had had bad luck with his thieving in Dereswater. Whatever the reason, he preferred to ask us the questions and sit back at ease to listen to us. To me, mostly. I was always a talker, if there was anybody to listen. Gry had a long habit of silence and watchfulness, but Emin could draw her out. I doubt he knew how lucky he'd been in finding us two, but he appreciated our making him welcome and keeping him comfortable through a bitter, rainy winter. He was sorry for us. He was bored, no doubt. He was inquisitive. "So what is it this fellow up at Garamond does that's so fearsome?" he'd ask, his tone just skeptical enough that I'd try as hard as I could to convince him of the truth of what I said. But these were matters that were not much talked about, even among people with the gift. It seemed unnatural to speak of them aloud. "The gift of that lineage is called the Twisting," I said at last. "Twisting? Like a sort of dancing?" "No." The words were hard to find, and hard to say. "Twisting people.
Making them turn around?"
"No. Their arms, legs, necks, bodies." I twisted my own body a bit with discomfort at the subject. Finally, I said, "You saw old Gunnan, that woodsman up over Knob Hill? We passed him yesterday on the cart road. Gry told you who he was. All bent over like a nutcracker. Branter Erroy did that to him.
Doubled him up like that? What for?"
"A punishment. The Branter said he came on him picking up wood in Gera Forest." After a little, Lemon said, "Rheumatism will do that to a man." "Gonan was a young man then. So you don't yourself recall it happening?"
"No,"
I said, vexed by his airy incredulity. "But he does. And my father does. Gonan told him. Gonan said he wasn't in Garamond at all, but only near the borderline in our woods. Branter Erroy saw him and shouted, and Gonan was scared and started to run away with a load of wood on his back. He fell. When he tried to stand, his back was bent over and hunched, the way it is now. If he tries to stand up, his wife said, he screams with the pain."
"And how did the Branter do this to him?"
Emin had learned the word from us. He said he'd never heard it in the lowlands. A Branter is the master or mistress of a domain, which is to say, the chief and most gifted of a lineage. My father was Branter of Caspermont. Gry's mother was Branter of the Barris of Rodmont, and her father, Branter of the Rods of that domain. We too were their heirs, their nestling eaglets. I hesitated to answer Emin's question. His tone had not been mocking, but I didn't know if I should say anything at all about the powers of the gift. Gry answered him.
"He'd have looked at the man," she said in her quiet voice.
In my blindness, her voice always brought to me a sense of light air moving in the leaves of a tree. "And pointed his left hand or finger at him, and maybe said his name. And then he'd have said a word, or two, or more. And it was done."
"What kind of words?"
Gry was silent. Maybe she shrugged.
"The Gera gift's not mine," she said at last. "We don't know its ways."
"Ways?"
"The way a gift acts."
"Well, how does your gift act?
What does it do then?"
Emin asked her, not teasing, alive with curiosity. It's something to do with hunting?
The Barra gift is calling, Gry said.
Calling? What do you call?
Animals.
Deer?
After each question came a little silence, long enough for a nod. I imagined Gry's face, intent yet closed, as she nodded.
Hares? Wild swine? Bear?
Well, if you called a bear and it came to you, what would you do then?
The huntsman would kill it.
She paused and said, I don't call to the hunt. Her voice was not wind in leaves as she said it, but wind on stone. Our friend certainly didn't understand what she meant, but her tone may have chilled him a little. He didn't go on with her, but turned to me.
And you, Auric, your gift is
the same as my father's, I said. The Caspero gift is called the Undoing, and I will not tell you anything about it, Emin. Forgive me.
It's you must forgive my clumsiness, Auric, Emin said after a little silence of surprise, and his voice was so warm, with the courtesy and softness of the lowlands in it, like my mother's voice, that my eyes prickled with tears under the seal that shut them.
He or Gry built up our end of the fire. The warmth of it came round my legs again, very welcome. We were sitting in the big hearth of the stone house of Caspermont, in the south corner, where seats are built deep into the stones of the chimney side. It was a cold evening of late January. The wind up in the chimney hooted like great owls. The spinning women were gathered over at the other side of the hearth where the light was better. They talked a little or droned their long, soft, dull spinning songs, and we three in our corner went on talking.
Well, what about the others, then? Emin asked, irrepressible. You can tell about them, maybe? The other branches? All over these mountains here and their stone towers, eh, like this one? On their domains? What powers do they have? What are their gifts? What are they feared for?
There was always that little challenge of half-disbelief, which I could not resist meeting. The women of the lineage of Cordamont have the power of blinding, I said, or making deaf, or taking speech away.
Well, that's ugly, he said,
sounding impressed for the moment.
Some of the Cordamont men have the same gift,
Gry said.
Your father, Gry, the Branter of Rodmont, has he a gift, or is it all your mother's?
The Rods have the gift of the knife, she said. And that would be to send a spell knife into a man's heart, or cut his throat with it, or kill him, or maim him with it how they please, if he's within sight.
By all the names of all the sons of Jorm, that's a nice trick. A pretty gift.
I'm glad you take after your mother. So am I, Gry said. He kept coaxing, and I couldn't resist the sense of power it gave me to tell him of the powers of my people. So I told him of the Olm lineage, who can set a fire burning at any place they can see and point to, and the Callums, who can move heavy things by word and gesture, even buildings, even hills, and the Morga lineage, who have the inner sight, so that they see what you're thinking. Though Gry said what they saw was any illness or weakness that might be in you. We agreed that in either case the Morgas could be uncomfortable neighbors, though not dangerous ones, which is why they keep out of the way. On poor domains, far over in the northern glens, and no one knows much about them except that they breed good horses. Then I told him what I had heard all my life about the lineages of the great domains, Helvermont, Tibramont, Boramont, and the warlords of the Carantages up on the mountain to the northeast. The gift of the Helvars was called cleansing, and it was akin to the gift of my lineage, so I said no more about it. The gifts of the Tibros and the Boras were called the rain and the broom. A man of Tibramont could take your will from you and make you do his will. That was the rain. Or a woman of Boramont could take your mind from you and leave you a blank idiot, brainless and speechless. That was the broom. And it was done, as with all such powers, with a glance, a gesture, a word. But those powers were hearsay to us as much as to Emmon. There were none of those great lineages here in the uplands, and the Branters of the Carantages did not mix with us people of the low domains, though they raided down the mountain now and then for serfs. "And you fight back, with your knives and fires and all," Emmon said. "I can see why you live so scattered out. And the folk on west of here, that you've spoken of, the big domain, Drummond, is it? What's their Branter's way of making you unhappy? I like to know these things before I meet a fellow." I did not speak. "The gift of Branter Augur is the slow wasting," Gry said. Emmon laughed. He could not know not to laugh at that. "Worse yet," he said. "Well, I take it back about those people with the innersight, is it, who can tell you what ails you? After all, that could be a useful gift." "Not against a raid," I said. "Are you always fighting each other, then, your domains?" "Of course. What for?" "If you don't fight, you're taken over. Your lineage is broken." I treated his ignorance rather loftily. "That's what the gifts are for, the powers. So you can protect your domain and keep your lineage pure. If we couldn't protect ourselves, we'd lose the gift. We'd be overrun by other lineages and by common people or even by Kallax." I stopped short. The word on my lips stopped me, the contemptuous word for lowlanders, people of no gift, a word I had never said aloud in my life. My mother had been a Kallax. They had called her that at Drummond. I could hear Emmon poking with a stick in the ashes, and after a while he said, "So these powers, these gifts, run in the family line from father to son, like a snub nose might do?" "And from mother to daughter," said Gry, as I said nothing. "So you've all got to marry in the family to keep the gift in the family. I can see that. Do the gifts die out if you can't find a cousin to marry?" "It's not a problem in the Carantages," I said. "The land's richer up there. The domains are bigger, with more people on them. A Branter there may have a dozen families of his lineage on his domain. Down here the lineages are small. Gifts get weakened if there are too many marriages out of the lineage. But the strong gift runs true. Mother to daughter, father to son." "And so your trick with the animals came from your mother, the Lady Branter?" He gave the word a feminine form, which sounded ridiculous. "And Auric's gift is from Branter Cannock. And I'll ask no more about that. But you will tell me, now that you know I ask in friendship, were you born blind, Auric? Or those witches you told of from Cordemont, did they do this to you? In spite? Or feud? Or raid?" I did not know how to put his question aside, and had no half-answer for it. "No," I said. "My father sealed my eyes."
"Your father? Your father blinded you?"
I nodded.